Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on St. Patty's Day 2022, the 17th of March. So welcome to our show today. We're going to have a nice time with a very old friend of ours, Chris Brock, is here. He's the English Department Chair over at the Downers Grove North High School in Downers Grove, Illinois, outside of Chicago. He's an education consultant with Novak Education. He's the chair of the Conference on English Leadership, which sounds like something Vladimir Putin would come up with. We'll find out what that is, okay? And they got a whole program over there, okay, all about wellness writing, which has to do with SEL. And so we're going to talk about it and how he's working with the associate principal on the school, Dr. Erin Ludwig. Erin's also here, and we're going to talk about what she does with SEL at school, et cetera. As you know, SEL is very important to us here. We are ace-ed.org. Go over there, check it out, ace-ed.org. Ace-ed.org is where we do all our stuff for equity and access. We're the Consortium for Equity and Access in Pre-K-12 Education. Okay, that's our website. We have our magazine over there, which is called Equity and Access. It's a wonderful online journal. Check it out. All of our podcasts are over there. A link to SEL Today, our other website, okay, seltoday.org, but you can link it through ace-ed.org. And also we have our new new training over there, our professional learning. We're very, very concerned about teacher retention. And we've developed some training that we hope will keep teachers reinvigorated and keep teachers in their job. We cannot lose any more great teachers. And so we're doing our best over here, and there's an icon for professional learning. You can check that out. Again, everything's over at ace-ed.org. Okay, enough of me blabbing here. Let's go to Illinois from Maine and bring on Chris and Erin. Chris, are you there?
How we doing, sir?
I'm fine, my friend. It's good to have you back on.
Yes, it's been a while.
It's been too darn long. How are you and Mrs. the lovely Mrs. Brock doing?
You know, we can't complain. Life is good given all the chaos that's around us, right?
It sure is crazy. It sure is. What is the Conference on English Leadership? Bring it over to Erin. What is the chair of something? It sounds like a name Putin would come up with. What is this thing?
Yeah, so the Conference on English Leadership is it's under the National Council of Teachers of English umbrella. And we are an organization dedicated to supporting literacy leadership across the country. So whether that's instructional coaches, department chairs, assistant principals, superintendents, anyone who oversees or does work with literacy, we're here to support that work.
Literacy leadership. And Chris Ebronke is the chair of the Conference on English Leadership, which is from NCT, National Council of Teachers of English. Erin, good morning, Dr. Ludwig. I'm Larry Jacobs. Call me Larry.
Good morning, Larry. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me
nice
on, and Chris, too.
Believe me, it is my pleasure. It is my pleasure indeed. Today you are indeed the rose among the thorns, me and Chris.
Okay. Well, thank you. He knew that. I'm glad you know that.
Yeah, that's great. Tell us what you do over there, almighty associate principal. I know you have a lot to do with social-emotional learning. And just describe your job in those terms, if you can, please.
Sure. I work with our student support services. And so I work with the counselors, the social workers, the psychologists, and the support staff. So we really focus on how we can embed social-emotional learning in all the spaces. And so the people I work
Good.
With primarily are people who work with Tier 2 or, you know, students who need a little extra help. And one of the big things, though, that we've done underneath, I guess, my umbrella at the school since the pandemic, and I would argue it only took a global pandemic for me to get airtime because this was important before.
Yeah.
We're starting to talk about how to embed it with everybody, with our adult social-emotional learning. How are we taking care of our staff? How are administration working in SEL into our meetings? And then how are we working it into our classroom settings so everyone can get it?
Lovely.
And there's a little bit of predictability. Yeah, so it's been great.
Lovely. And please check out what we're doing at seltoday.org. We do a lot of work with SEL. Okay, and you're invited to go over there and check it all out, Erin, really, like everyone else.
Great.
It's so important these days. So much, Chris said it, it's so much chaos out there, all right? It's bad enough if the whole world were normal, but the world isn't normal these days, All right, and it's hard enough to grow up with your kid. All right, but boy, to go see all this every day, it's just absolutely wild. I want to get into the wellness writing thing, but before I do that, Chris, tell us about Downers Grove North, okay, where you teach. Where you've been, how many years now, Chris? How many years?
Yeah, I am in my 10th year at Downers Grove North as the English department chair. So I like the work I'm doing. I like the people I work with. My wife and I also live in Downers Grove. You know, it's about 30 minutes outside of Chicago. So nice suburban feel to it, but we're close to the big city and just, you know, doing what we can each day.
Yeah, Downers Grove. And by the way, I have never asked this question before. As you know, I used to live in Illinois. Okay, I lived in Deerfield and in the city of Chicago. You know, it is Downers Grove. Do you know who Downer was? Has anybody ever researched who Mr. Downer was? Do you know?
No, but they've got a nice grove, but I don't know who he was.
Aaron, do you have any idea who Downer was?
I have no real idea. I could hypothesize it's Pierce Downer because I've heard that name around these parts, but I wasn't from the suburbs, so I'm just making a guess.
Okay, good enough. Someday we're going to, I always like to ask these questions and try to encourage curiosity as to where these places get their name. For example, I also lived in McHenry. You guys are familiar with McHenry, Illinois, and that was named for a man who was the first secretary of war under the Washington cabinet. Same guy who did Fort McHenry. Did you know that, Chris?
You know, I can honestly say I did not. I've been to McHenry, but I did not know that. Yeah.
There you go. So McHenry, Illinois is the same guy as Fort McHenry, first Secretary of War under George Washington. All right, enough of this. Okay, wellness writing. All right, now, Aaron, by the way, are you a guidance counselor? You know, you're really involved in all this. You're a school psychologist, you're a doctor. What are you? I'm curious.
Oh, I was actually I was an English teacher by trade.
Oh,
so,
there you go.
I loved it, and I loved it. And so that's why this project has become such an interesting meld between the worlds I've served in, you know.
Absolutely. And now you're so involved. Let me go down. You know, you work in academic intervention, restorative practices, trauma-sensitive instruction, social-emotional learning, which is all, you know, school counseling, school psychology, et cetera, okay? And you're in charge of that, and I think that's just wonderful that you're able to do this. And now you've taken your expertise in both areas and put it together with the wellness writing, all right? And I'll start with Aaron. Ladies first, tell us what it is, Aaron. What are you doing with wellness writing? Share that with the world here.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Well, I guess I was lucky enough that Chris Franke invited me to have a little bit of space in the classroom that he shares with some senior writers. And in our kind of quest to be better at Tier 1, so better at doing social-emotional learning across an entire building, this gives us a spot, or at least he and I, but me as an administrator, when I don't have a lot of direct contact with kids unless I find it, to get their feedback on what's going on and also engage with them in conversations about it. And so it's been really interesting in how we've developed it. And I guess Chris chime in, but I feel like he had the idea after we had started some adult social emotional learning work with our leadership teams. And then also we're talking about how to make it applicable to teachers. And so at least one of the, I'd say, fundamental things that led us to launch it is getting that student voice and feedback in that process as well. And Chris, I don't know if you want to add a little bit more about your intention, because I feel like you had the great idea first.
Yeah,
Chris, go for it. Fill it.
Well, and I think it's important that maybe just kind of, you know, to really kind of tangibly define exactly what we're doing. So once a week on Fridays, Aaron comes into class and we lead the students through a series of activities that are designed to combine reflection upon their own emotions and emotional state with the act and art of writing. So as an example, this past Friday, so, you know, last week, we started with an opening prompt of my relationship with music is. And we just had them journal openly about kind of what relationship they have with music, what does that mean? We gave them some other, like, prompts that they could consider in terms of, like, music makes me feel, those sorts of things. And then we asked them to find two songs that either shared a similar emotion or had deeply contrasting emotions. And we gave them space and asked them to disengage for like 10 minutes, you know, distraction free, just really live in those songs as you listen to them. And then we just had to do some writing afterwards. How did that make you feel? What memories did that trigger? And we build in time to talk about it in between. We never force anyone to share their actual writing, though some students choose to. But we encourage them to just kind of have a conversation about, you know, what did they feel. And so we do, and we've, you know, each week is a different activity along those lines. This coming week, I guess tomorrow, we're going to revisit the very first activity we did, which was giving them emotions term sheets that they actually had the words to describe how they're feeling about graduation. So we did that in January because these are seniors, second semester, after all of this pandemic chaos. And then we're revisiting that tomorrow. So we're going to ask them to go back to their writing from January and read it, see what they're – are they still in the same space emotionally? And then we actually did for that one, which was really cool, we used a Padlet where students can post things anonymously to post their emotions about graduation so that they can kind of compare and contrast, like, I'm not the only one who's, like, freaking out about this, or I'm not the only one who's super excited about this. And so we're going to revisit that tomorrow. So those are just a couple examples of sort of what it actually looks like in the classroom.
And who are these kids? I know they're seniors, okay, but is it one class? I mean, you obviously you teach a number of classes. Is it one class that you selected for a specific reason, or did these kids actually sign up for an elective called wellness writing or whatever you call it?
Yeah, no. So I actually, in my role as department chair, I only actually teach one class. So this is my one class a day, and it's a senior composition course. So they signed up. They had no idea that wellness writing was going to be part of this. They just signed up to take a general, you know, credit-bearing English class so that they can graduate. And the very first week, we sprung this on them. We said, hey, surprise, on Fridays, we're not going to do traditional class stuff. We're going to hang out, we're going to write, and we're going to, you know, have snacks and just enjoy being humans who think and feel and all those sorts of things.
Wait, when you sprung this on them, using your term, okay, when you sprung this on them, what was their reaction? Was there an eye roll? Okay, what is Mr. Bronchi talking about here? What is this stuff? What was their reaction?
Yeah, Aaron, you want to talk about that? Because we actually gathered some data about that.
Yeah. So it was interesting. They were a little, if I had to recount how they looked, what they physically were telling me, because we've talked a lot about emotions, both physically and how they like feel in their body, they looked a little apprehensive. I was also came bursting in as an administrator guest speaker, right? So they were kind of getting a feel of,
associate principal doing here? Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, what's this woman with a walkie-talkie doing? But they, you know, we started with, and I know you mentioned I do work in restorative practices. They looked a little unsure and uneasy. But what I've learned in that work is we don't innately have the label and the words to label our emotions because we really don't sit and have to identify them a lot. We're better humans if we do. And so we started before we did that first graduation prompt with that kind of emotion word sheet and talked about this is where you feel it. This is where you may hear it. How do you know you feel these things? And so I feel like we gave them permission to engage with it the way that they were the most comfortable. And that helped. And that first activity also being crafted around the shared experience of graduation, I felt was like a collective exhale that this isn't going to be as bad as I maybe thought, or this is going to be interesting to engage with. So.
Right. That's actually, and Aaron, I'm going to stick with you on this. When you do this as the associate principal, okay, and you're teaching the class, you're an ex-English teacher, I have to ask this question right away. What do you learn, what are you, as a professional in the SEL field, let me say it that way, learning about the kids? I mean, this is not only good for the kids. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, okay? But as an educator, what have you learned from this, working with the kids so directly on SEL and this type of thing? Their emotions, if I may.
Sure. Actually, I love that question because that's one of the things I really enjoy about this project, that was part of my why, was to be back in the classroom and to feel what it felt like right now, because I know you said one of the things that you support, the teacher retention conversation. This is a different feel in classrooms. Right? And so it feels different in classrooms right now. And so I went in wanting to know, what does it feel like? What is the song and dance now? What is the engagement dance? And so they've given me both really reflective, like explicit statements about their emotional state as kids and students. But they've also given me a lot of informal feedback around what it takes for the orchestration of social emotional learning supports in this conversation in classrooms. And so I'm getting, number one, the feel of what it feels like to be in front of the classroom again, although I'm not doing it every day, but it's given me a peek into the needs and the way students are engaging with technology, engaging with each other, that then I've been able to take back as observational data points at places I've sat. And Chris and I share some leadership spaces, and he knows I've spoken to it a couple times in those spaces too, because unless administration makes it a point to get into the classroom setting in a way that puts us as an instructional being, we're not going to get that same level of feedback. And I think right now, if we really want to keep a healthy school, we need to do that a little bit more.
Exactly right. And I don't expect the miracles here. As you look at this from what you've learned, just looking at these kids, let's say there's 20 kids in the class, okay, what changes I'll just ask it like that, and you can answer it in a way. What changes would you see come out of this in your attitude or in the way you approach other teachers or in the way you deal with kids? I mean, you learned something in here. You got a little bit deeper. Okay? And
yeah.
What do you expect? I'm going to go back to Chris in a minute, but I'm just curious about this because, you know, it's easy to say we're going to do this SEL class. But there has to be a why and a results impact out of it. And that's why I'm asking the question. I'm just curious here. Go ahead. I'm throwing it more on you than the kids. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've been asking our teachers to do social-emotional learning strategies through CASEL, three instructional practices.
Yeah.
So we've actually asked an initiative. So I've used this conversation and I guess my observations to further that conversation. It's allowed me to talk to teachers about, hey, I see this engagement concern. I see that we're struggling as a society talking to each other. Like, I would notice that is one acute thing I've noticed is students, we're recalibrating what it's like to work with each other in groups and to talk to each other because we had screens between us for a year. Just that one bit of data has allowed me to go back to lead these school PDs and say, I see this need. Here's some resources for this need. What does it look like to you? What do we need to do to strengthen students' intersocial skills back so they can be collaborative learners? That's just one thing that this experience has given me insight to that, which then has allowed me to talk about that in instructional spaces and talk about that in professional development and also normalize that struggle for the teachers because that was, I guess, an unanticipated struggle, right? And unless we talk about it, this is the adult social emotional learning. Unless we talk about it, we may feel like we're dealing with that in isolation and we're not, right?
That's right. Boy, Chris, Erin's really a smart lady.
Yeah, I enjoy working with people who are significantly smarter than I am.
I don't know about that, but she's really a smart lady, and the insight she's gaining is incredible. Chris, let me ask the kind of the opposite set of questions. What insights of this are you getting about the kids, or are the kids getting about themselves? All right, because obviously your SEL wellness writing has to have a purpose. It's not just for just to say you're doing SEL. I know you better than that.
Yeah.
There's a purpose for it. Okay. So what are you learning from it, and what are the kids learning from it?
Yeah, I think you know it's twofold. I would say one is that we've been very intentional with making the writing side of it deliberate. So not every week, but often when we're doing the free writing, the journaling, you know, whatever you want to call it, we give them a writing focus, something that I say to play with. So I might say like, hey, today I want you to, while you're doing your reflection, try and play with alliteration. You know, see if you can be alliterative in your writing. Or try to do an extended metaphor for how you're feeling right now. And so it's connected to a senior writing course, right? We are actually trying to get better at writing. And one of the things that I wanted to model in this project was that, you know, sometimes, or not sometimes, but writers get better by writing. Just like when you go to, you know, a volleyball practice, you practice volleyball, and writers practice. They don't publish everything that they write, and sometimes they sit down and just say, like, I want to work on my sentence structure today. So we try to be deliberate with that, but also finding a balance between not, like, distracting them from being able to, you know, really explore those emotions. So that was kind of the hope or the goal for me as a writing instructor, was finding an authentic way to get kids to see that writers practice writing. And I think it's working. You know, I think that they've taken to it after a couple of weeks. And, you know, from the emotional side of it, in terms of what we're trying to get out of it, we've talked about this openly with them a lot, is it's just that better ability to be able to know what you're feeling and then what that means for you. So as an extension of this work, as an example, I've also pivoted my class to where we start every Monday in the same writer's notebooks that we use on Fridays, spending just 3 minutes writing about one thing about this week that I'm excited about and one thing about this week that I'm stressed about and why. Why am I stressed about it? So there's kind of a nice little continuation of how this work is going, and we're trying to then, you know, take that the skills that we're developing about, like, how do you label your emotions and apply that to something like, I'm stressed about my math test this week. Well, why? Why are you stressed? So we're trying to, you know, just kind of infuse it as much as we can and give them the support so that, you know, next year when they're not in a classroom or they're in a classroom, but it's a collegiate classroom, that they can, you know, better navigate that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting when you say that, because a good writer, all right, especially a fiction writer, brings up their own emotions. Okay, they don't say it like that, but they're writing from their own emotional standpoint. They have to understand that, okay? And that's a hard thing to do, to just start admitting to yourself all the things that are nuts about you, okay, and bring that out and expose it to everybody in some different way, okay, in this case through the use of fiction, all right? But that does come out, all right? And, you know, and I always think, like, the example that immediately comes to mind is Stephen King, and the way he approaches adolescence, which is obviously based on his experience. If you look at his novels, Carrie and It and all those, about growing up, his fears about growing up, he expresses through through his fiction, all right? And to be able to confront that, okay, is a great part of learning how to write. And I hope the kids are appreciating it a great deal. Well, you're the department head, Chris, and you're having a good time with this. You must have department meetings and talk to your colleagues about this. One of the things we're asking teachers to do, and Aaron, you're welcome to comment on this as well. In fact, I'm going to ask you to do that. SEL is becoming endemic, which I think is good, okay, throughout the entire K-12 spectrum, all right? And it's great that we're embedding it, okay, into everything we're doing, but we're asking teachers to do something they're really not trained to do, okay? It's that simple. This SEL has come up. It's been around for quite a while, Castle and all that sort of thing, but we're asking people to do something many of them have never been trained to do. In fact, I'm wondering how many of them are being trained to do it right now in teachers' colleges, all right? We still want them to do it. What, Chris, just say your English department colleagues, as you talk about social-emotional learning and embedding that more and more into what they do, what's their reaction, if I may ask?
Yeah, you know, I think not only the colleagues that I'm lucky enough to lead at Downers North, but, you know, every time I lead a meeting for the Conference on English Leadership or do any consulting work, I'm also teaching a grad class right now that I was teaching just last night. And I try to model that. I want them to live in that experience that we should be providing for our students. So, and that's something that Erin has pushed, and I'll let her speak to that a little bit too. But she challenged the department chairs about a year ago to say, if we're going to make headway with getting teachers to do this work in their classroom, they have to experience it themselves. So, you know, like as an example, you know, one of the techniques or strategies I use when I open a meeting sometimes is spending 3 to 5 minutes asking everyone to write a thank you note or email to someone in their life. And, you know, it's simple, it's meaningful, And that's just one of probably, 15 different strategies that I use when I open a meeting or a class or something like that. But the teachers experience it, and then they start to see, like, one, it's not that hard to do, and two, it feels good. And, there's still – I won't
that's
lie,
interesting.
Right? There's still going to be some of those teachers who, think this is just touchy-feely and this is stupid. Let me just, be really tough on my students and all those sorts of things. And I'm like, you can do both, right? You can spend 3 minutes saying, take out your phone and send a text to someone who you care about to say thank you for something that they've done. And then you can still move on to, now you need to go analyze this passage from Faulkner. Like those can both exist. and I think, just by my goal is just to try and model it. And again, I thank Aaron for pushing the chairs to do that. And I don't know, Aaron, if you want to speak to that and how you came about integration.
Aaron, speak to it.
Again,
I'm going to introduce it again. We ask educators, to embed SEL, and they know it's important, all right? But it's hard to do. I'm a social studies teacher. I'm a chemistry teacher, in middle school or high school. What are you talking about here? What's the reaction when you're hearing from your colleagues, your teachers, et cetera?
Sure. So I will go back to, I guess, we, like you said, this has been around for a while,
It has been.
The conversation is easier because of the shared experience and trauma of the pandemic. And so when that started and we were doing all the back and forth remote learning and we were all going home questioning whether or not we were doing a good job, right?
Yeah.
We started that conversation then, and we modeled that. I was lucky enough, my counterpart at the other school is like-minded, and we started having the emotional conversation. You need to name it to tame it was the phrase we used. You need to be able to name your emotions when you're overwhelmed, adults.
Wow.
You need to tell us we're here to support you. So we started it there, and I think that was about when I challenged the department chairs, because I knew that in order for it to stick, we needed to start having the conversation around the benefits of social-emotional learning and the ability to keep academic rigor, because we were going to be coming back into a very, I guess, changed learners. We were going to be coming back to changed learners whenever we were back in person. And so I knew that the connection that the benefits of social-emotional learning have to academic rigor and success, we needed to be prepared for that conversation. And part of that was to model it for the adults, because that's one level of buy-in. Like Chris said, if you feel it, you can see the benefits of it. But there also haven't been trained to do it. I was not trained. So we had to start making that up. It's kind of like with the kids, where we almost gave them a sheet. These are your emotions. We started that conversation with the teachers. And then now this year, we've been really explicit about running workshops that talk about the benefits of SEL and academic rigor. We've brought in some Hattie research. This is how these strategies help kids take
John Hattie?
So we have, and we've just talked about how when we and I have some work from Cobb and Cronepple that's based on equity that talks about you can't take the jump toward academic success until you feel safe and that you belong, and you won't do it. And so when we talk about that chemistry teacher or that, social studies teacher who may not be intrinsically or, an SEL person, or they may say, I don't do this, I'm not like that. But you do want to further your content area, and you do want kids to stretch themselves. And we know that if they are safe, they're going to take that risk. But I also had to create an environment where teachers felt safe to take a risk, maybe to try a strategy they'd never tried before. And they had to have that same level of social, emotional support, comfort. We're encouraging that. We're here for you. That culture makes a big difference in that. So I think that's one step that I wanted the department chairs to be on board. They all were, because we needed to start being ready to connect with academics, because we were going to be coming back to learners who have changed, right, post the pandemic.
Okay, let me ask a silly question. Okay, when you talk about this kind of stuff to the teachers, and to the kids, this is a funny question. Do they look at it as like corny, or is the reaction, I really do want to learn this? I'll ask Aaron this. Aaron, how do they react, literally react to it? Do they go?
I would say high school, there's a bit of skepticism
that's a better word than corny. That's a better word than corny. They're skeptical.
Yeah.
By the way, I like what you're doing. I love what you're doing, but I know people's reactions to these things.
You're not wrong in that assumption. And people are like, but when they feel it and when they start to see students do better. It's not corny anymore. And that's really, that's why it's been so good.
Bingo. Thank you.
Hattie's research. Right. Because
thank
it helps us be better learners.
And the bottom line of all this, and this is the bottom line, is to make the kids learn better. It's great for the teachers.
Yeah.
Okay. They're going to feel better too. But you know what? It helps the kids learn better. We've learned that this really matters. Okay. So what are you going to do next? Chris, what's the next thing with all this?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to keep doing the wellness writing throughout the rest of this semester and, you know, probably spend some time over the summer revising it. And if I'm lucky enough,
cool.
Aaron will work with me again next semester. But we have another project in the work that's connected to this. We are working on a universally designed flow chart for teachers or students. To implement optimistic closures in their classrooms. So, you know, the third capsule strategy is optimistic closing. So we're kind of identifying what's the purpose of your close. Do you want your students to reflect on a struggle from today's lesson? Do you want your students to set a goal for tomorrow's lesson? Do you want students to hold their thinking? And then give them sentence stems and approaches to doing that. So we're hoping to kind of create like a very tangible, you know, if someone, you know, a teacher or a student says like, well, I guess in specific, a teacher, like I want to end my class with an optimistic closure, but I don't know how to do it. This flow chart will be a super useful, they can just start with it tomorrow, you know, essentially. So we're actually working on that through Novak Education,
cool.
where I consult as a tangible way to do this work. So that's the current project.
What is Novak Education? I never even heard of that. What is that? You mentioned it on the prep sheet. What is that? Novak.
Yeah, so it's an educational consulting company owned and run by Katie Novak, who is an author of, I think she's on her 10th book now.
Wow, sorry, I don't know her.
A brilliant, yeah, definitely someone to look up. She is the sort of guru of Universal Design for Learning, UDL.
Oh, I love that.
All of her books work in that. She even, you know, she has one that's how do you do UDL in equity work, how do you do UDL in leadership. She's, you know, as a mentor transformed how I teach and how I lead. And then she was lucky enough to help me or to allow me to kind of be on her team and do some
nice.
Work with her. So we actually, Aaron and I just finished a rather lengthy article about how you universally design and set purposes for meetings, faculty meetings that you lead. And then that's now why we're transitioning over to this UDL optimistic closure document that we're working
nice.
Through. So, yeah.
Well,
Aaron, I'm going to put her on the spot to make sure that, you know, she has to answer this publicly. But I'm hoping we're doing wellness writing again next year, right?
Of course we are.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. She can't go back on her word now. Okay, of course you're
yep.
going to do it. Speaking of writing, okay, you're both English teachers. Why don't you write us an article on all this? It's good stuff for our SEL work. We can put it up on site. You want to do that, Chris?
I'd love to.
Write it up. I'll send you an email. We'd love to help
yeah,
you out and get
great.
The word out. Okay?
Wonderful. That's
terrific. Aaron, you can join in, too, and grade him. Grade him. Make
oh,
him
wonderful.
Work. Terrific.
I do. I will press him to meet his deadline.
I'm just going to send you both an email. We'll get it together. You're both terrific. Good job on all this. I love hearing this kind of thing. And so innovative, so clever, and I just hope it keeps working as well as it is. So, Dr. Ludwig, thank you very much. Mr. Bronchi, thank you very much. You guys are great. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank
are you.
You.
Kidding me? You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay,
bye-bye.
Everybody, that's Bye, Aaron. Aaron Ludwig from and Chris Bronchi from Downers Grove North High School outside of Chicago, Downers Grove. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. And check out our website, teacher-retention.com. That's where we're putting our training stuff, all right? It's important stuff these days. All right, teacher-retention.com. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.